Have you heard? AT&T Fiber with Wi-Fi is coming soon. We're talking internet speeds up to 5 gigs and Wi-Fi that reaches more corners of your home. Perfect for turning your basement into a streaming zone or your attic into a gaming cave. Sign up for updates and be the first to know when it's available near you so you can start living like a gigillionaire. Limited availability. May require AT&T extended Wi-Fi coverage. Visit att.com/internet/fiber is coming for updates. Wired speed maximum 4.7 gigabits per second. Speeds vary, not guaranteed.
Only the best run here at the Indianapolis 500.
Mario, who do you feel you'll have to beat in this year's race?
People like A.J. Foyt and Bobby Unser, for instance.
Stand by for the checkered flag.
Absolutely incredible. Danny Sullivan spun in front of Mario Andretti.
A.J. has done it.
Beyond the Bricks with jQuery and Mike Thompson. Brought to you by Quality Supply and Tool. Think outside the box. Store on 93.5 and 107.5. The Fan.
Another night to talk about the great personalities, names, figures, historical marks of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. jQuery along with Mike Thompson as Landon Koons puts it all together for us tonight. Mike, you have once again dipped into your Rolodex of, or your rather, I should say, file library of great audio archives and come up with one of the real colorful personalities and a driver that I think to this day people still enjoy talking about from a number of different areas, talking about somebody who was very prolific in the early 70s at IMS and Salt Walther.
Yeah, and he has something in common with the person we talked about last night, Tim Richmond, because they're both from Ohio and they both drove in both IndyCars and NASCAR. So there's a little bit of a theme there between the two of them.
So, in other words, Mike, as an Ohioan, you're giving some love to your fellow state residents, right?
Yeah, that's right. So now we got to get Ed Pym on the show, and Bobby Rahal drove in a couple
that.
NASCAR races.
Nothing
so
wrong with that,
getting
right?
all the Ohioans. Yep.
Salt Walther made his debut in 1972 in the Indianapolis 500, but didn't get to participate in the race because he dropped out just as the race went green. He did not complete a lap, and then in 1973 also did not complete a lap because he was involved in one of the worst crashes in Speedway history. And that, Mike, realistically was an accident that impacted Salt Walther throughout his life. First, let's hear the accident and how it was heard and seen, I guess you would say, from ABC in 1973.
Doesn't look like a repeat of last year's start. No, it's a good one. And here they come. Bobby Unser going for the lead. Johnny Rutherford right alongside him. Rutherford down low, but Bobby, there's a terrible crash on the home stretch. There are several cars involved. We can't see the numbers, but it's been a bad crash on the start. It was in the middle of the field somewhere. Terrible thing. Explosion. This is what everyone has feared. This is why there's been such a terrible atmosphere of fear here all weekend long. Shame that driver. Waving, he might be on fire, that man. The way he's waving, you can't see an alcohol fire. Those explosions are not cars. Those are the bombs overhead that are normally set off during the start of the race. There is a report already that there may be spectators hurt, not confirmed. The wire fence right here on the straightaway was ripped apart. It was very fortunate that a car did not come into the crowd because one of the standards holding up the wire screen has also been broken in half. Right here at the most crowded part of the grandstand, we almost had an automobile go into the crowd. And it appears definitely that there are spectators injured, but here's a replay of what happened here. He was back in the sixth or seventh row of this car. Conjecture that it might have been Salt Walther, but watch. There's a car going, starting to the right. Right there, and look at this. Incredible explosion, fuel spraying out over the spectators in the first few rows. That could mean real trouble. Another explosion, and like a pinwheel or a garden sprinkler, all the fuel is being sprayed out of the car. That could be a good thing for the driver if he has survived this crash. Car upside down, coming to a rest.
Mike, that accident was a significant one because of the fact that that really did kind of delay Salt Walther just in terms of getting back onto the racetrack.
Yeah, he spent several months in the hospital. He was critically injured. A lot of people thought it was going to end his career. And to Salt's credit, I mean, he didn't ever feel that way. He came back, but it really affected his life, the rest of his life. I mean, he ended up addicted to, you know, painkillers and things like that because of the severe burns and all the all the problems he had from that horrific accident. But again, to his credit, he did make a comeback and came back to driving the 500 the next year.
He was back in 1974, as Mike had just mentioned. Speedway historian emeritus Donald Davidson on Salt Walther's early career at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway.
Salt actually had a top 10 finish. He was ninth in 1976. Admittedly, that was a race that was stopped because of rain. But he was in the 1972 race, qualified at the last minute. In fact, the car that he was in got out of at the last minute. His teammate was Bud Tingelstad, and Tingelstad was kind enough to step aside and let Salt go out and qualify, and it was pretty spectacular, but all for naught, because when they came down for the start, he pulled off into the first turn grass and never completed a and then came back the next year and then came down in 1973, which is one that we'd all probably rather forget. And he was involved in a multiple accident. And so he was in the rather unusual situation of having driven in the Indianapolis 500 twice and never made it to turn two. But he did receive pretty severe injuries, and he was in the burn center at Ann Arbor for quite some time, but he made the comeback. And I think a lot of people, whatever they thought about Salt, I thought he was one of the most charismatic people I've ever met, but I think a lot of people kind of it opened their eyes when he came back in 1974 and then did qualify in 1975.
In 1975, Walther dropped out early again in the race, finishing 33rd for the third time. But he immediately got back in the race in controversial fashion. Donald Davidson again, this time with the story of Salt Walther's return to the 500 in 1979 in a relief role.
In 1975... Bob Harkey drove the second car, and the arrangement with Harkey qualifying the second car was that if anything happens to Salt, his car, we're going to you in, Bob Harkey, and then Salt's going to take over for you. And that actually happened. Salt was the first one out in 1975. So in his first four starts, he was 33rd three times. But what the records don't normally show, or typically the box score will only show the starting driver, Salt took over the Bob Harkey car, and that was running 10th when the race was stopped at 174 laps because of rain. I do remember this just like it was yesterday, being in the master control tower and then seeing that when Salt very, very animated fashion signaled to the crew to bring Harkey in, and I could see their sort of arms outspread as if they were saying, "You really mean it now?" And he was quite adamantly, he did this like a semicircular motion with his arm and pointed the finger down as if to say, "Bring him in now." And so in came Harkey. He gets out, Salt gets in, and this is all under green. And by the time he got going again, obviously they lost quite a bit of time. And I just think that although it ended up Bob Harkey with Salt Walther in relief finished 10th, had they waited until the first pit stop, they probably could have maybe finished 6th. But Salt was calling the shots.
Mike, the reality is the late Bob Harkey didn't have a whole lot to say about that entire situation that was positive, and you found that out through an interview, correct?
That's right. I got the chance to sit down with Bob Harkey, who was one of my favorite people to talk to. He's just a great guy, and he brought it kind of up out of the blue in a conversation talking about driving for the Walther team in 1975, both at Indianapolis and Pocono, and he had a kind of a funny story about it.
Well, they did the same thing at Pocono. Now, I was mad at Salt, and he told me to call me after the 500 and says, "You want to drive my car at Pocono?" And I told him where to put it. Well, then he told me, he says, "All right, you can have all the money. There's no money there," which it wasn't. So I says, "Okay, I'll drive it." We'll go to Pocono, and I think I barely got it in fourth gear. And he pulled me in and says, "You're running fast enough, qualify it." So I qualified it, and we start the race, and I'm still mad about May, and I'm going to set him up in front of the straightaway in front of the pits and pass him right by in front of his dad. Well, as I'm going down the straightaway, I'm looking at over two, and the car coming off two, a dark car, and I thought it was Salt. Well, I catch your car and pass it, and it's not Salt. So when it comes time for my pit stop, I come into pits, and he's standing there with his helmet in his hand. Takes it again. And then there was a phone booth back there where the tunnel was in Pocono. If I had known that, I'd have parked it back there and called him on the phone booth and told him where his car was.
Salt Walther was one of those that, again, as we talked about, a fan favorite for certain and one that overcame a lot of adversity, but also had personal adversity as well. We'll get into all of that and hear a fabulous interview with him when we come back to Beyond the Bricks.
There was a time when sunshine brought us back to the brightest days of our youth, when midday picnics reminded us of simpler times and vibrant gardens reflected innocent romance in full bloom. It was a time of remembrance. It was summer, this summer, at Biltmore. Plan your visit today to experience Tutankhamun, his tomb and his treasures. Kids visit free all summer long.
This is the Bet365 Command Center. Get your race updates here all month long and make sure to enter for your chance to win $500 by predicting the winner of this year's race on July 27th. Go to 1075thefan.com to enter. Now, here's your 2025 race update brought to you by Bet365.
Will it be Denny Hamlin who will continue his hot streak coming off of Dover, where, of course, he won as they now head their way to the Indianapolis Motor Speedway and the Brickyard 400. Who will win on the Xfinity side of things? The Pennzoil 250 will be on Saturday. Brickyard 400 will be on Sunday. Maybe Kyle Larson again shows his way and mastery around a big super speedway oval. Whoever you think it might be, make your prediction by submitting your guess at 1075thefan.com and your chance to win $500 from Bet365.
This is Beyond the Bricks, brought to you by Quality Supply and Tool. Think outside the box. Store on 93.5 and 107.5 The Fan.
Jake Query, Mike Thompson, Landon Coons putting it all together for us. This episode of Beyond the Bricks. Brickyard 400 coming up Sunday at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. But we're talking about one of the real personalities from the early 70s and one who on and off track overcame adversity to a great extent. Mike, he missed the show, did Salt Walther in 1977, but he is one of those guys that just seemingly, even when he wasn't in the action, was right on the cusp of the action, if you will.
No, he was definitely around the action all the time. And there were some interesting stories. Obviously, we heard the story in the last block about Bob Harkey's issue with the Walther team. And it seems like there was a little bit of an issue in this next story. Donald, on Talking Gasoline Alley, several times told this next story, which is one of his favorite stories that he tells. Talking about 1977 when James McElreath was trying to become the first father and son in the race. They actually were on the track together, but James McElreath didn't make the race. But they were trying to become the first father and son in the 500. And so there might have been a little bit of gamesmanship involved with Jim McElreath and James McElreath and Salt Walther keeping Salt out of the race.
And this is simply known as the hotel bill story.
77 was the year that James was at the track and he took the rookie test. This was the first time a father and son were entered for the first 500. It wasn't the youngsters. They were the first to drive against each other in the same race, but Jimmy McElreath and James tried to qualify for the same 500. So Jimmy was driving for Carrillo and James was driving for a car that Jimmy owned. And so on the final day, Salt Walther had been bumped. This was the thing. Salt Walther had been bumped and he had another car ready to go and it was in line and it's coming down close to 6 o'clock. And 20 to 6 or quarter to 6 or whatever it was, James goes out to make a qualifying run. And in those days, it's still 3 warm-up laps. So he takes the 3 warm-up laps, takes the green, And then the first lap was not fast enough, but Jimmy lets him stay out there and eventually runs through the full run and then comes in, which he was perfectly entitled to do. And did the full lap run, which like probably 1.5 miles, 2 miles an hour too slow to make it. And then I don't remember if somebody else may have got out, but the gun goes off and Salt Walther stuck in line with the backup on the outside looking in. And so... a lot of the crowd didn't care for that too much. I do remember there was a, you know, not really loud booing, but there was sort of some people were disgruntled that why don't you bring him in because he's not going to make it and somebody else can go. But back, Jimmy was perfectly entitled to do it. So probably, I don't know, half hour, 45 minutes after the track was closed, Ray Marquette, who was a sports reporter for the Indianapolis Star, he said, well, Jimmy, a lot of people are asking why you left him out there. And he said, well, he said, you know, we'd gone through the whole month, and he said we knew we were down on speed a little bit and he probably wasn't going to make it, but he said we're going to come back next year with a much better car, and we thought it would be a great opportunity for James to go through the whole process and sure. feel what it's like to get the instructions and then go out and then take the warm-ups and the green and then just know what you're out there doing four as perfect laps as you can. And he said, so we just thought it would be an experience. So Marquette says, well, there's a rumor going around that when you drove for the Walther family at Pocono 2-3 years ago, and there was some misunderstanding over the hotel bill and that you ended up having to pay the hotel bill and that this was a payback. And Jimmy says, oh, no. We just wanted James to get the experience. So anyway, they go in opposite directions. And then Marquette turns around and says, hey, Jimmy, how much was the bill? And McAree says, $437.18 or something like that. Yeah. But anyway.
So always a fun time. You got to love, Mike, the fact that back then, even the biggest of competitors – there was always some good-natured ribbing that went on with guys. I guess that still happens to an extent today, but there, you know, it's always interesting to hear the kind of behind the stories of how guys that were competing also got along at the same time.
Yeah, definitely a little bit of, like I said, there was a little bit of gamesmanship there, and I enjoyed when Donald tells those kind of inside baseball stories. That's one of the most fun parts about going back to the old Talk of Gasoline Alley shows, for sure.
Now, one of the things also about drivers from that era still holds true today, but certainly back then, was a lot of them were willing to race anything just to kind of get that bug. That included Salt Walther, who was willing to drive more than just Indy cars, Mike.
That's right. He drove in the Daytona 500, which people may not recall. He's one of the people who has driven in the Indianapolis 500 and the Daytona 500. He had 4 starts in NASCAR. He had I think his best finish was 12th. And so he dabbled in a lot of things, but he was also very well-known driving in unlimited hydroplane boat racing as well. So, Salt had his hand in a number of different parts of racing, for sure, and was a versatile competitor and was always fast. I mean, that's one thing you can say about Salt Walther. He was always fast. May not have lasted all 500 miles all the time, but he was always fast.
Now, one thing, Mike, when you talk about competitors, it wasn't necessarily by design that anybody should have tried to compete with the fabulous interview that's one of the favorites of Beyond the Bricks from Jochen Rindt in the Indy 500. Now, can you recount for me real quick how the Jochen Rindt interview went, Mike?
The Jochen Rindt interview with Luke Walton is one of the classics of all time, certainly, and is my favorite interview. You know, what'd you think of the 500? Not much. Are you coming back next year? No, not coming back.
But he
back
did.
Back to you in the tower, said.
But he now, did come I'll, back was the irony, right?
Right, exactly. He did come back. And what's interesting is somebody sent me this interview that we're about to play with Salt Walther, which is almost at the level of the Jochen Rindt interview. I mean, this is going to be in the top couple. It doesn't knock the Jochen Rindt interview off the top spot, but this is definitely in the kind of inner circle of the top interviews of all time from the Beyond Bricks. So
this is
I think you're really going to like this one.
1978, Salt Walther qualified 22nd, but only lasted 24 laps in the Indianapolis 500. And then afterwards, ABC's tape-delayed broadcast with Tommy Smith, this interview. The interviewer is Bill Fleming, and the individual that kind of caught some heat about the interview, or the subject of it, was Tommy Smith.
Thought you had problems right from the beginning today. What happened?
I've always taken all the excuses, and I've said our team goofed, and I've always covered up for a cheap mechanic, but if anyone gets it this year, it's Tommy Smith. I ran 198 in this car in practice, and I ran 197 in practice, getting ready to qualify, and Tommy changed the entire throttle system last night, the night before a race, and only an idiot would do that. Either he goes, or I'm going with another team. Right off the bat, the throttle system is wide open going into one. I had to stand on the brakes. He puts new brakes in the car, and you just don't do it. The best team I've ever had. We selected them. They've done a great job. Tommy should have been let go, and I'm not making any excuses, and I'm not driving. We're going to stay here. Dave Walton's bench is going to go out. At the end of the race, we're going to be there. So I'm not quitting. We're going to be there.
You're not going to fire him yet, then.
Huh?
You're not going to fire him yet after the race.
No, Tommy's not working on a car anymore. It's not a such thing as firing. I've begged the man. I've put up with him since 1972. He won't listen. You don't make changes the night before a race. You just don't do it. I talked to six top drivers. You do not do it, but he does.
Absolutely incensed, Salt Walter. And we understand Tommy Smith has left the pit, although they're still working on the car, and is picking up his gear in Gasoline Alley and is going to leave the racetrack.
That's probably a good idea, right, Mike?
I would think so after that. I don't think he was necessarily welcome in the pit anymore. That was one of the more incredible interviews I've ever heard.
You know, somebody said, and I take the crap all the time, and I'm listening to it, and in this particular case of Beyond the Bricks, Mike changed the entire rundown the night before we're supposed to record, and I'm not going to do it anymore, and he's fired, and I'm gone or he's gone.
Well, I mean, I do change the rundown a lot right before the show, so that actually is true. So,
and I catch the heat for all time.
Now, here's the thing, though. But if I walk, we don't have a whole lot of a show anymore because I walk with all the audio.
That's true. You leave, you take the whole, you get in the car and drive off.
Yeah,
and I'm standing
right
there going, well, now it's just me talking for an hour. There goes that. Right?
Exactly. But, there you go.
Both of us know, Mike, that if for some reason something happened to this program, neither one of us could do it without the other one. But that's not necessarily the case with Salt Walter, because he did have opportunity to try to venture elsewhere, right, or look elsewhere in terms of the following year.
Well, what's interesting is he, on the Talking Gasoline Alley with Kevin Calabro, talks about a kind of an unusual trade his family made with Roger Penske. And right after this clip, I'll tell you something else. I talked to Salt Walter himself about a trade he says he made. So here's the clip from Kevin Calabro and Salt in 1979 for the Talking Gasoline Alley.
Salt, give us a story on that race car. It's a beauty, and it was Roger Penske's, as I understand.
Well, it was a good idea. We had my dad and my brother Jeff, we had bought two Boxer 512 Ferraris, and it's one of the fastest cars now in the world. It's about 185 or 190 mile an hour car. And Roger had one, and unfortunately it was damaged pretty badly, okay? Uh-huh. And they had a deal where we decided, since he had the car, that maybe he could use another one. The other one was damaged so severely. But the actual part of the story, a lot of people don't even know. We traded the Ferrari for the Penske race car, and then, to be quite honest, and Roger, to me, is one of the greatest businessmen going, and they dad and he kept dickering back and forth on a price. And I don't know if it was Roger or dad, or maybe his brother Jeff, that said, I'll tell you what, for the extra $5,000, we'll flip a coin. We flipped a coin, and we won. And it's the only time in my life, or dad's or Jeff, that we ever won anything other than boat races. So it was an interesting story, and Roger, their people have been just tremendous, which he always is, but we're just having a little bit of trouble with our car getting up to speed. Yeah. Because the car that we actually are running now is it's a PC6, and it's very similar to Rick Mears, but the car had never been raced. This was the last car, the tub, the whole thing, so it was put together kind of in a hurry, and we've just had a lot of little problems with it, but they're giving us a hand, and a lot of people are helping us, so I think we'll be in good shape tomorrow.
So it's interesting about that clip. You know, he talks about the trade he made, his family made with Roger Penske. But then I actually met Salt Walter one time, and he told me about the fact that this was his claim. He says that the car that he was critically injured in 1973, he claims that that was actually the 1972 winning car that Mark Donohue had driven to victory.
Really?
For Roger Penske. Yeah, he said, he told me that flat out, and he said that, you know, he was critically injured in that car, and the remnants of that car The last I heard were at the Henry Ford Museum in Dearborn, Michigan. So he told me that the car that you would see in the facility in the infield is not the actual winning car, because he said, I was driving the winning car the next year and got up in the fence and it got destroyed. And it's not, basically the winning car is not intact anymore. So that, again, take that for whether, unfortunately, Salt's not here anymore with us to talk to him about it. But that's flat out what he told me, was that they had bought the winning car after the 72 season.
And with that, Salt Walther, you know, you had the situation where he was unhappy and then he proposes the trade and he's driving in Mark Donohue's car. And, you know, there was so much versatility that we talked about. That versatility actually, Mike, carried itself to an extent, not just from the race car, but also, as is the case we see with a lot of athletes, in particular in the 70s, into a fledgling acting career, correct?
That's right. He, again, on that same episode of the Talk of Gasoline Alley in 1979, he told Kevin Calabro that he was going to be doing some acting, and talked about how he, you know, was getting into doing, he wanted to actually do some announcing on, for example, on like the Speedway Radio Network and things like that. He wanted to be a driver analyst, but he also talked about his fledgling acting career in this clip.
It's 29 past the hour at WIBC. Salt, you're doing some broadcasting your own. Is that sort of a hobby, something you just kind of got into with Chet there, something you'd like to do maybe in the future?
Well, I think I'd like to do it in the future. You know, I did it with Chet Coppock, and I've always, when I raced the boats, I was always doing quite a bit of talking on the microphone. But then I got into this deal where I got out, moved out to Beverly Hills in Hollywood about 3 years ago, and I got an offer to do one of the Rockford Files, but they said, first, you get to go, and you get to take acting lessons. So I took acting lessons, yeah. Dramatic lessons, and then they showed the, it took us 2 days to do the filming in California, and the program was shown, I think, March 16th, and uh-huh. Now, since that happened, I've got a chance to do three or four more shows out there, and I'm looking right now at a major motion picture as a co-starring with a couple of pretty big names, so it was a good move to move out there for me. It's helped quite a bit.
Super. I'm glad to hear that. I've never known a movie star before.
I don't either.
Let's go back to the phone. Let's go ahead and pick up the red phone, and we'll be on the air here.
Now, Mike, if we're talking about great television shows and great television of the 70s, you know, I remember a couple of shows. The Incredible Hulk, I remember. My sister always felt bad for Dr. David Banner, I think was his name, played by Bill Bixby, if I'm not mistaken. One of the other shows from that era, Different Strokes, was just after that. Dukes of Hazzard was massive. And everybody loved Bo and Luke Duke, but then you get a little bit older, and I mean, everybody loved Daisy Duke too, right?
I think that's accurate. I know when I was a kid, we watched that show, and I know my dad did not watch the show for Bo and Luke Duke. My dad probably tuned in for Daisy, is my uh-huh. guess. He stuck it out for Daisy, I think. So yeah, that was a pretty big show, though. The Friday nights actually had some pretty big time shows. You know, Dallas was on Friday nights, and I think Falcon Crest was on Fridays, and Misfits of Science, I know you liked that one with Courtney Cox. That was a big hit in the 80s as well on Friday nights. So yeah, I agree. Dukes of Hazzard, though, was a pretty big hit when it was on.
So Dukes of Hazzard with Catherine Bach as Daisy Duke, and once again, Mike had a forklift over at the house to lift up all of the audio archives he had to go through in order to get to this clip. This is Salt Walther on the Dukes of Hazzard with Catherine Bach, and Salt playing, and Mike has it in all capital letters, an evil truck driver.
And that's one surefire way to stop a truck.
Anybody home?
Why don't y'all come in and find out?
I knew this would be my lucky day. Can I give you a hand?
Well, you sure can, sugar, but only with the car. Now, this muffler is rattling something fierce. I'm afraid it's going to fall off. Reckon you can tighten it up for me a bit?
Honey, I reckon I can do just about anything for you.
Aren't you sweet? You knights of the road are okay by me. I just don't know how to thank you.
I do.
Second thought, I do know how to thank you. Next time you get stopped by the Hazzard Sheriff for speeding, just mention my name. On account of he's my daddy.
Like in Sugar or Papa?
Papa.
Well, what's the difference? Either way, he'll be packing a shotgun and carrying a nasty grin. So I guess I'll just be moving on.
Have a nice day, Sugar.
I'm going to tell you something, Mike. The Emmy, Grammy, and Oscars and Tonys were all lined up for that one, right?
Yeah, I think Saul Walther had a shot at being an EGOT, as did Catherine Bach for that scene. That was some fine television right there.
You know, when it comes to the crossover from actors and Hollywood and television, the silver screen, the big screen, the little screen, all of it, I think the first person that you think of when it comes to the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, and certainly we have talked about, I'm sure, in the past with Beyond the Bricks, is that of James Garner, who you and I have talked about, Mike. And while obviously, you know, I didn't know James Garner, he is one person that, and I think it's worth pointing out, and you tell me if you agree or disagree with this, but in being able to be around or talk to people at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway that were around at the time that James Garner was regularly around, both as a fan, driving the pace car, and a number of capacities, I have never heard anything other than that James Garner was as fine and decent a gentleman, a human being, and just a down-to-earth, humble, fun-loving guy as anybody that's ever come across the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. I've never heard anything other than that when talking about the guy that played in Rockford Files.
Oh, I agree. I mean, he was absolute gentleman. He couldn't have been nicer. I actually met him a couple of times, and I actually got him to sign a picture one time of him from the movie Grand Prix. And as I think I mentioned on the show one time, I was quoting him lines from the movie, and that seems kind of corny when you think about it now, but he actually got a kick out of it that I knew the exact line from the movie that I was quoting him. And so I've never heard a negative thing about James Garner. He seemed to really enjoy it. He did a lot of personal appearances. He took to being in the kind of insider racing club. And he came back a number of times just because he loved it so much. So I've only heard positive things about James Garner, and my experiences were very positive as well.
Salt Walther as Vern the Mechanic on the Rockford Files.
I don't like the way it's handling, Vern. Something's holding it back.
Yeah. I ran a 1:13 just a few minutes ago. That's an awfully good speed.
I'm telling you, it's dragging its butt.
Mr. Coombs, there's not a car that can touch it out there. That's as good a speed as we're going to get.
That's what I want to hear. Just keep it that way. But if Marion or her attorneys come around, it's a lemon, right? Riddled with problems. Take it around a couple times all the way out.
Sadly, we mentioned that 1973 accident with Salt Walther, and that would lead to an addiction to painkillers that would get him oftentimes Davidson on Salt Walther's later career.
Probably as the result of the injuries, seeking medication a lot of the time and got himself in trouble and was the guest of the government. But I tell you what, a more charismatic guy I've ever met. And when he'd been away for quite some time, and somebody said, "Hey, Salt Walther's in the garage area today," and I remember that I was sort of looking out for him, and I didn't see him, but I heard the voice. And when you saw him, he looked quite a bit different, but by golly, that voice and the whole demeanor was the same. He was a great guy. A lot of people didn't care for him, but by golly, he went out there and did it and drove in the Indianapolis 500 several times.
A lot of people didn't care for him. I think he did a lot for the sport. He wore the flashy uniforms and looked like Captain America, and he was a health proponent that worked out a lot and was extremely muscle bound. And I'll wind up with this. If you go ahead and try to make up your list of everybody that drove in the Indianapolis 500 and the Daytona 500, I think Salt Walther is a name that you wouldn't think of. And it seems to me that in 1975, I think he was 12th.
And indeed, he ran in both races. And as we talked about, somebody that was willing to venture into just about any challenge. Salt Walther, one of the great personalities at the Indy 500 and the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. We thank you for listening to Beyond the Bricks.